And good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It is 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion, our little coffee clutch this morning. We're joined by WAMC's Alan Shartok, as well as editor... editor of the Times Union, Rex Smith, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. Grunt here.
Good milk. I don't grunt.
All right,
except when I'm eating.
Finally, a man of class. Welcome all, and nice to have you here. Some items in the news, and one close to Rexy's heart here. We'll start out with the appeals court has allowed the corruption case against our old senator from upstate New York, Joe Bruno, to continue. Rex, what's the latest?
Well, it's a three-judge panel, which the lawyers for Joe Bruno say they are likely to appeal. But the federal panel has said that while his first conviction was vacated as a result of the Supreme Court's decision invalidating the theory of the law under which he was convicted, the court panel of three judges has said it's okay. It's not double jeopardy for him to be now accused of bribery.
And it's not double jeopardy because he was convicted the first time, right?
Well, he was convicted, but it's not double jeopardy because it's a different crime that he's being charged. Same circumstance,
okay.
But it's being charged as bribery as opposed to the law that he was... fraud of different sorts.
Okay, because on the face of it, it would seem like they're just out to get him, and this is double, triple jeopardy. And that's what he's saying.
That's what he's saying. And the judges unanimously disagree on the face, in the sense of the law. They say it's not... they say that it's just a. In fact, they say that there is no valid argument that his lawyers put forward. So they were pretty blunt in it. And the question is, the next step would be for them to appeal to a full panel as opposed to three judges. They might say, well, let's go before all seven or however many that they would before.
A lot of these judges come, Rexy, from being, prosecutors. So in other words,
I don't know if these.
I'm just taking a wild guess here. You don't see very many trial lawyers becoming the federal judges. You see people who are federal prosecutors before or prosecutors
more frequently. I think that's
becoming,
true.
So that they're natural. I also think there's something here called context. The context is that everybody knows that we got real troubles right here in River City with our legislature and corruption and the rest of it. The Bruno thing, Times Union chronicled this very well. The Bruno thing, I'm not saying you had a stake in it. I'm just saying you chronicled it very well.
Mm-hmm.
The Bruno thing was the kickoff play, really, in which, if a guy sold a horse for more money than it was worth to a lobbyist or somebody wants something else, we're going to put a stop to that kind of thing. So they can't stop themselves, even though the guy is, 85 years old, has been through the mill. This week, something either contextually or not became very important, and his daughter thought to be a no-show and indicted.
She was accused civilly.
Sued.
A civil accusation under she and the former head of the Research Foundation of the State University, John O'Connor, were both charged by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman in a civil complaint that they had basically given her a no-show job and about $90,000 a year. So.
But somebody once said to me, Rex, tell me if you think I'm right about this or not. The answer, tell me now, before I say anything.
Okay. Just say he's wrong.
Okay.
And then we're
wrong. You're
yes.
wrong, Alan.
Wrong.
Okay. Somebody once said to me, if the state guys are after you, you got a shot. But when the feds are after you, just curl up and go home. I mean, you're done.
Ira, you've been awfully quiet. I know you haven't been able to get a word in edgewise.
Well, no, I'm deferring to the expertise here. I just am struck by the fact that this case, as it continues to move along and remains in the public eye, just further underscores the problems that are existing in this Albany legislature.
Exactly.
And I have no reason to believe that the reason that they're continuing this case is to continue to put the pressure on the legislature. But boy, that's what it does, as far as I can see, among all the other things. I just wonder, for example, to quote the famous Don Rumsfeld, I don't know if it's unknowable, but if Joe Bruno was the only politician in the city of Albany and in the state legislature who ran afoul of the law, and his case had reached this point at his age, would they finally just sort of look the other way? And I'm wondering to what extent, if any, they're saying we've got to keep the pressure on Joe Bruno for not only what he may or may not have done, but also to keep the pressure by extension on this full legislature, which certainly deserves to have the pressure kept on it.
I don't know that I would agree that federal judges actually do that. I think they
probably
looked at
not.
It on the face of the law. And the second question that would be in my mind would be the extent to which where the line would be drawn. And a lot of people say this. I hear from ordinary people who say, you know, he's old enough. He's gone through enough. You know, let him off.
Yeah.
I wonder at what age, really. So, at what age, Alan, do you think a person that the law doesn't apply? Is it when did the law no longer apply to him when he turned 80, or is it when he
How
turned 82?
72.
72.
I see where you're going with this, Rex.
I got eight more years.
Rat.
No, Rex. I mean, I think. You know, the Times Union has done a terrific job of chronicling the fall of Joe Bruno. I'm not here to say you have a stake in it.
Have said that twice now.
In which we take no joy. I might add that I'm a virtual neighbor of Joe Bruno's, and I really like him, and I think that he for our community he was a really important figure. I mean, he made a lot of difference in this community. Community in the greater capital region. But I think that people tend to say, oh, well, the Times Union has been after him. We actually reported a lot about Joe Bruno that I think was important to get out there. It was not with any desire to take the guy down or anything. It's just that he's our local guy and we needed to report what was going on. And
sure.
If there happened to be corruption there, so be it.
Sure.
We also
sure.
reported the good stuff.
Well, I loved reading all your stuff. I thought that, you know, there were many connections. You were getting information from somewhere, maybe the Fibbies and maybe,
Fibbies.
Or maybe someone else.
Could we get the decoder ring out again?
But somebody was sure feeding the Times Union. Yeah.
Well, you know, you guys have been following this. You continue to follow this. Have you gotten any idea, as Jimmy and others in your bureau have followed it, how strong this case going forward is? In other words, regardless of what happens, he's going to appeal. How strong is the new case?
Well, I think we know what the evidence will show because the evidence has been presented. That is,
sure.
the same evidence that got him convicted of the previous offense will be the evidence presented to support the claim of this bribery.
All right, so why is this not double jeopardy then?
Oh. Well, you have to talk to the judges about that. I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
but Rex's point is, I think, is you get the guy who's going to get up there and is going to say, yeah, I sold him a horse for more than it was worth. And why did you do that? Well, I expected something else back for it. That's basically what it was, right, Rex?
Well, that's part of it. They gave him this lobbyist guy who got a whole lot of money in state funds to support his business, was basically given some... what did favors for Joe Bruno, and Bruno in turn, including giving him $80,000 for a racehorse that was virtually worthless, and that's part of it. That there is a $440,000 in consulting payments to Bruno from this guy Jared Abbruzzese of Loudonville. The feds say, in fact, that $440,000 that he got in consulting fees was in fact a bribe, and that the senator paid that off, in effect, by giving him state money to support his businesses.
But I would say the answer to your question is 80.
80 is the year?
80 is the year. So once Alan turns 80, okay.
It's all good.
Yeah.
And then watch out, because it'll be really crazy. But, you know, Ira...
Ray,
is much younger.
And I'm trying to bring Ira in here with a sports allegory here.
Yeah.
I almost perceive this as an A-Rod situation in that... A-Rod is looking at a year and a half ban. He's 38. By the time he comes back, he's pretty much too old to come back. So in this case, you have a trial that's going to happen at some point. That'll wind its way through the courts. Then appeal instantly. The odds are, even if again convicted, this guy Probably won't see a day in the slammer.
Probably, but he has to have awfully deep pockets if he's going to be defending himself for the rest of his life, and his legacy is not going to be Joe Bruno, the powerful state majority leader. It's going to be Joe Bruno, the powerful state, majority leader, yes. Senate majority leader, who may or may not have been convicted of these corruption charges. And I think that means something to these guys at the end of the day.
Although, I come over the Freebie 90 every morning, coming over to Albany, and his name is still on that stadium, isn't it? They didn't take it off.
No, they took Joe Paterno's name off in Penn State. I mean,
they didn't take this off. I mean, people.
I mean, the Hudson Valley Community College. You mean the ballpark?
Yeah.
Which also has a building named for the Edward F. McDonough Recreation Center. And
what happened to him? Remind us.
He went to federal prison as a result of reporting that reporters who worked for me, put forward. I'm sorry to say that Eddie McDonough. Anyway, they left his name
to him,
on the building.
Is he still alive?
No, he's not. He served his time in federal prison. He was the Democratic chair of Rensselaer County, and he was engaged in a kickback scheme involving insurance premiums that the county paid through him, which is a long time thing. You know, it used to be that that's just what the way things were done in politics. And in Albany County, that was what helped to support Mayor Corning, was insurance contracts.
He had a big insurance business.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, time eventually caught up with these folks, and in the case of Eddie McDonough in Rensselaer County, it caught up with him there, and they still have the building named after him, though, and so I suspect that Bruno Stadium, or the Joe, as we call it, will probably still be called that.
And the A-Rod thing, just to remind people, A-Rod, if you listen very carefully to his recent remarks, is not denying that he broke the law, quote-unquote. He apparently is appealing this sentence, to use that word broadly, to cut back the length of the sentence, because we're talking about roughly $30 million at play here, even if they cut that penalty in half. And so you're right. If he were to be suspended and it holds up and he's gone for the rest of this season, which is now not going to happen, and all of next season, he'll come back at age 40, but he's still going to be paid for the remainder of his contract, whether or not he makes the team.
All this appealing reminds me of an orange.
I was going to say a banana.
Well, what a happy way to take a break. We're joined by Rex Smith of the Times Union, Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and our own Alan Shartok. We will take a break, and we'll be back on the roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from Bay Path College Graduate School, offering a Master of Science degree in Nonprofit Management and Philanthropy on campus or online. Baypath.edu for details. The 10th Annual Zucchini Festival, West Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Saturday, August 10th, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring zucchini events, decorating, baking, zook races, also games, rides, crafts, food, and live music, weststockbridgetown.com. Brattleboro Retreat, working to help people overcome mental health and addiction challenges since 1834. BrattleboroRetreat.org. And Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront estate with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant, an organic kitchen garden, orchard and spa, booking day, evening, weekend, and events. ButtermilkFallsInn.com.
And welcome back to the roundtable on the roundtable on the roundtable and so on and so on and so on and whatever you want to call it.
We're calling this the Media Project Redux.
That's true. It's nice to have you guys. You record the Media Project on today,
right,
a day early, and then here you are.
For a do-over.
He's Alan Shartok. Ira Fussfeld is here. Rex Smith is here. I'm
just
Ray
waiting
Graf.
To get insulted by Alan. That's what, you know, just
me?
You need another hour of that, because a half hour, it's never enough.
I would never do that. A tall, stately, stentorian, braying.
Not that the Times Union
guy
has a stake in this.
I would never do that.
All right, so on to, as McLaughlin would say, issue two. We'll talk about, Eric Holder, in the lead, and this is from NPR.org, we can reference this, sentencing reform gains momentum. And Attorney General Eric Holder says, you know, it's time that we take a look at this and reduce some of these mandatory minimum terms for nonviolent offenses. Alan, I know that you're raising your hand. I call on you, sir.
Oh, here's the way I see it.
All right.
Okay, so Holder makes a good number of arguments, which I think are you know, worthy. First of all, you know, everybody knows the United States has a huge rate of incarceration, number one. Number two, often they are people of color. Number three, we have taken away the judge's rights to look at individual cases and say everybody does some minimum time. And
so the crack epidemic in the 80s sort of brought a lot of this on.
And this is, whatever, but what I'm simply saying is that Holder is saying let the judges make some decisions. Of course, when you let the judges make decisions, it may be that if a white face appears before them, they get a different sort of effect than if somebody who is of color appears before them. However, the argument is that the numbers of people who are in prison are should be going down because there's a lower rate of crime going down. And one of the things that what leads one to think is, yes, but is the reason that there's a lower rate of crime because we have these minimum sentences.
Ah, but you know, the fact is, I think there's both a financial as well as a justice issue on here. A quarter of the Justice Department's budget is eaten up by federal prisons.
Yeah.
We currently have 219,000 people in federal prison, and half of those people are serving time on drug charges.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It makes you wonder, you know, 40 years into the drug war, is this working?
And I think that's Holder's point. It's not working, but you know, it doesn't do anything about the states. We had Rockefeller and imposing huge increases in penalties, and this won't affect anything on the state level.
No, other states have done what New York has done.
Sure.
We've been reforming this, and other states are doing the same thing, trying to sort of going along the same line here, saying, you know, we've gone overboard with this, and to Alan's point, it has primarily focused most especially on people of color, and this may be a time to just take a look at whether this is A, worked very well, and whether it's fair.
One last thing on this, Rex. Every time we say, okay, the governor says, let's close this prison, and this prison, we get the unions and some of the others saying, no, we can't do it. It's become an economic issue as opposed to, an industry issue.
On the state level.
Yes.
For sure.
But let me say two things. One is agreeing with what I think you're agreeing, that some of these minimum sentences are, in fact, too severe for the crime for the reasons that you described. But if we allow judges to have discretion on what the penalties should be,
sure,
does that create an uneven playing
field?
That's
just what I said. Exactly. I think that's true. I once took a class to a court, let's just say somewhere around where your newspaper was, Ira, and there was a famous sort of hanging judge there.
A hanging judge.
Yeah.
The guy gave maximum John, let's just say.
Oh, yes.
And so what happened was, you'd see this kid come in with his mother in a suit, a white kid come in with his mother in the suit, and the guy would say, there, we're going to give you another chance. And in comes the kid whose mother is not available, who happens to be of color, and down goes the gavel, and, you know, disrespectful, kind of comments from the judge. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah. So the argument should be, let's reduce the minimum penalty, but it should be the same for everybody.
Well, no, you can't do that. I mean, how do you do that? If you get some character who comes in, you know, who's really done something very bad and the judge sees it. But there is always, I mean, you could do it. You could be a researcher. You could come from Harvard. You could take the aggregate of all of the cases and who's black and who's not. Okay, I'm getting the signal.
And we're going to take a break here. But one of the interesting things about this whole movement is you got Patrick Leahy, you got Rand Paul, and you got Grover Norquist all on the same side.
Right.
It's kind of like a total eclipse of the sun. All right, listen, let's take a break. It's the Roundtable. Rex Smith is here, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Shartok, along with Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. Hit it, Hopper. And welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's the Roundtable on the Roundtable. It's what they're calling it this week. 9:34, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. By the way, I forgot to mention this.
We don't call it that anymore.
No,
but
we
you're
don't.
Out here to make trouble.
It's just the talk.
No, it's just the first hour of Roundtable,
fine,
it's called.
Fine. You can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or a Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. Yeah, so now what was that term, Ira? Technology native?
Technology native. I heard that this morning for the first time, and if I understood it correctly, It's the 20-somethings or younger or a couple of years older who have known nothing but the current technology, the digital world, the computers, as opposed to those of our age and older who have been brought into this technology from the outside and have to assimilate it. It's not native to us.
And we try. I'm tired of the whole thing. Yes?
You know, it's so interesting because, you know, now that you've raised that, I'll probably get into trouble for telling this. As you know, as you all know, as the whole world knows, I recently had a back operation.
No, really?
And it was done minimally invasively.
Yeah.
So that means the guy's hands, a brilliant young surgeon named Shen, his hands never go in your body.
Right.
It's all Nintendo. So up there on the screen, there's this gigantic, thing.
So what, he's doing it from his mom's living room's couch?
Well, I don't know where he does it.
Get me some more Cheetos, Mom. Working on Shark Talk.
But I want you to think about what Ira has been saying, which is, if somebody is born and brought up on playing Nintendo, and then all of a sudden he becomes a surgeon, and by the way, it's going extremely well, the back thing, it takes much less time to recover and all the rest of it, then the question is, what about the other guys who didn't get brought up with Nintendo? Can they ever recover?
Sort of like a newspaper publisher or editor who's trying to figure out what to do for the rest of his life as print disappears.
Yeah. Well, there you go again.
Not something that I'm having.
Topic on me here.
Now that I've left with the business, I don't have to worry about that quite a bit, but I do feel for my colleagues.
By the way, we all want to congratulate you on your
it's a wonderful
retirement.
Thing. Absolutely.
You've done a wonderful job.
I mean, I hope you feel feted. Not feted.
It's a kind of cheese. It's a kind of cheese. That the Greek people use. Yeah.
Because there, I've noticed how the community has responded, and I think it's a wonderful tribute to the work that you've done in that community for all these years. So
thank you. That's very nice. And I'm trying not to use the word retirement, although that's what the company used in its press release.
Oh, boy.
But that's okay. I have retired from the
Daily Freeman. As opposed to axed? What word you
No, no. retirement has something of a finality to it.
Oh,
so, you know, I'm doing things like this, and I'm going to be writing, but, hopefully not yet.
Are you going to be writing an expose or something?
I don't know.
Put another way, do I have to worry?
Oh, I know about you.
I think he would write a more
interesting
book.
I've been to your house.
Rex.
You know,
look at the time, Rex.
You know, these euphemisms, you don't want to use the word retire. I remember when I was an intern, my first reporting job, I wrote an obituary. Oftentimes you start these with obituaries, and I wrote that so-and-so had passed away. And the city editor, grizzled old guy, came back to me and said, I was working for the Rapid City Journal, my hometown paper in Rapid City, South Dakota. And he came back to me and said, Rex, in the Rapid City Journal, people do not pass away. They do not kick the bucket, go to their great reward, or cross the Rubicon. He said, they die.
Yeah.
So that was the lesson, that people die in the Rapid City Journal.
I've been beaten up for that, for saying die. Some people only say passed away.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should use the real word. It's like articles that report the euthanasia of a pet. An animal was euthanized. When a reporter writes the animal was put to sleep, I think, well, isn't that sweet? Because that's what we were taught as children. Put the animal to sleep.
Well,
that's what we hear.
As with many newspapers, ours now runs paid obituaries, so that the content is entirely up to the family of the deceased. So the kinds of phrases that you're talking about are showing up all the time, and I can do nothing but cringe at them.
Is that good? I mean, I don't like
it. It's good for the revenue.
You got to make some money.
Well,
you know?
I know
families
it's good.
Like it.
Yeah, but then you read these things about now he's with so-and-so, and you know.
Well, I was going to say, instead of saying passed away, I read an obit recently that said so-and-so had reached the gates of heaven.
Exactly.
But the well, that's what the family wanted. And
is there no editorial?
No.
But, I mean,
shouldn't there be something like may have reached?
Possibly. I mean, rumors suggest, but you look at these times, and I was talking to Mike Spain about this off mic yesterday, classifieds used to constitute a large part of revenue for papers.
Huge.
You got to do something.
Yes.
I mean, if it's the obituaries, who's complaining?
No, it's a sad for people like Rex and I who are editorial people. Even when I fought it at our paper for a long time, even though I was the publisher, we were one of the last papers in our company that went to the paid obits because it was against the grain for me. But it was a losing fight, and I knew it.
But think about it: is it news? The guy did
it, obituaries are news, and so there are still real news obituaries.
Sure.
If someone prominent dies, then in addition to the paid notice, there will be a former news story.
Is this something we had on our list that we were going to talk about?
No, not at all. But once again, you've co-opted the show
into
bizarre directions.
But you're into our wheelhouse, and this is the Media Project. Yeah. Listen to us Sunday night at 6 and Monday at 3 right here on Northeast Public Radio.
Does that make me Christina?
No, Ian did that today.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. We are joined by the Media Project Fellows, Times Union's Rex Smith, Daily Freeman's Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Before Alan started talking about his surgery, I had intended...
That's where this started.
That's how it started, and it's his fault 99% of the time when things go astray. There was an article in Politico about Google Glass, and it brings up a host of policy questions. Now, four states are already clamping down on wearing these Google Glasses, and we'll talk about what, in fact, they are.
Yeah, what are they?
In a moment. Well, hang on. Wait for it. Buy the premise. Let me set this up, all right? So, basically, four states say you can't drive with these things. Now, casinos are worried, and rightfully so, about card counting and cheating of all kinds. So they're barred in a lot of casinos, probably all of them. Hospitals are saying...
How would you know about that particular thing?
Enough. Hospitals are weighing the confidentiality problems caused by these. Cinema owners say, look, you can go in and you can bootleg a movie just by wearing your glasses. So these are just, that's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and some guys could go on dates.
So that's what these things allow. It's basically a wearable computer. You can take video, shoot photos, surf the web just with a tap or a voice command. You can stream what you see directly to the web. That's what I've seen in the demonstrations of it, which is pretty cool.
We have at our place a fellow named Ivan Lahara has been with us. He is a technology native.
Yep,
and he is one of 8,000 people in the country who were selected to test these things.
So they had to pay for it.
Yes, they did have to pay for it, and he's been wearing them in the office. In fact, last Friday, my last day at work, when I was walking around saying goodbye to people, it didn't dawn on me because it had become part of his body. I didn't realize he was wearing it, and he was recording. You know. He was going to put the video of it on, and I asked him not to. But these things are largely unobtrusive. They're like bifocals, but only the top half of them. They're very small.
Yep.
But to your point, Ray, all of the things that you say could happen, yes, they could happen. But welcome to the world of technology. Things are changing.
There ain't no going backwards.
And you can already go. You can already sneak into a movie theater and take your cell phone.
And they've done it.
And they've done it.
Sure.
So this makes it easier to be sure. I don't know how. It seems to me it would be distracting driving.
Yeah, that should be against the law.
Now, I saw some years ago when the company was still buying my automobiles. I bought a car that I think they called it IQ, and you could look through the steering wheel while you were driving, but the speedometer, the speed, showed up almost mysteriously the glass in front of
heads-up display.
The heads-up, that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of the same kind of technology. So it's there. I get the sense that it will not be obtrusive. You can concentrate your way through it, but it is always there.
Oh, it's good. Well, it's going to. I mean, look, guys, I come on as I said before, the Freebie 90 in the morning, and I can look around on both sides of me, and there's somebody with a cell phone in their ear.
Okay.
I mean,
and
there
a camera
is,
and everything else. But I think it's gone too far, and I'm sorry, I'm gonna say it.
Well,
Google CEO Larry Page shrugged off fears at a shareholder call recently.
Naturally.
He said, people worry about a lot of things that when we use the products don't turn out to be an actual concern. He said, we are thinking very carefully about how we design glass because new technology always raises new issues. The best way for people to understand new technology like glass is for them to experience it firsthand. Hey, we need some regulations, do we not? Are we going to go willy-nilly into the brave new world?
Well, I don't know that we should make regulation before there is actually a product commercially available. You know, to regulate something before we've actually seen whether it needs the regulation is to act out of fear, Ray.
Yes, okay, Rex, I see you're on your high horse again.
Well, I think the things that you're raising, Ray, are the kinds of things that the 8,000 testers are testing, and they're going to get that kind of feedback.
Well, wait a second. What do you have to be Einstein to figure this out?
No,
Wait, just hold on a second. I never get a chance to talk around that.
check, please.
I have only one question.
Wait,
your back?
Yes. Here we are on Medical Monday. Or what day is this?
Okay, but wait.
How is your back?
When somebody's riding down the road, right? And it's just been described by Ray. And all of a sudden, he wants to start taking pictures of what he's seeing on either side of him, illicit or not. And he's got to tap his phone, his glasses, to make that happen. That tap is an accident waiting to happen.
You know,
that's
here's the thing. It's going to become ingrained. Pretty soon, we will have the technology embedded in us by chips so that, you know, I'll pull my earlobe to make the video
I think
start.
You're right.
But
and
even
I'll,
that pull is distracting.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's no different. Well, wait a minute.
So let's
not go. There are a lot of things to be concerned about if we're talking about driving and distraction. But we already, without these glasses, have to look to change the station or to click on your hands-free phone.
That's correct.
All right.
So
no, no. Two wrongs, three wrongs, five wrongs don't make a right. And the fact of the matter is we know, and that's why state legislatures are dealing with this, that these cell phones are really bad news
all
because
right.
when they have an accident, they add them all up. They have aggregate
driving,
data.
Shriving, all right? Yeah. This is not the overarching issue here. The overarching issue, and I want you guys to talk about it here on the roundtable.
Stop it. Just stop that right now.
Is when does our right to a certain modicum of privacy end? In other words, I don't like it when I see some person at the bus stop taking pictures. I might be out taking the air, I might be walking around, and I'm not doing anything wrong, but why, and how much? Rex.
Well, I think that's a very good question, but you've got to get over it in public places because you're already on video just about everywhere you go nowadays.
Including in front of this building.
Yeah.
Well, but it's not new. I mean, when they were still using speed graphics cameras in the 1920s, if you're standing on a sidewalk, some newspaper photographer could take your picture as long as you're in a public place.
And if it's a newsworthy, used for news purposes,
yeah.
not necessarily for commercial. But
So
the fact is, you have the right in your own home to regulate these devices. But I don't think that you're going to get much support
sympathy.
Or sympathy for out in public because the police have cameras everywhere. I can understand your concern.
Okay, but how about this? Now, a Google Glass or an iPhone or whatever else, you can stream real time. So if I'm Rex and I'm wearing a stupid-looking Google Glass and I'm walking around and Alan is in the office spouting, that Ray, he is such a jerk, I don't like it. Which is something he says fairly often.
That's a lie.
And it goes directly onto a website. Is that not an invasion of privacy?
You could say that. And you know, you really might think that. But I don't know that you overcome that by regulation. I think you overcome that by trying to get Alan to behave better. And so
I'll go with the regulation.
But hasn't that made, I know it has with me, hasn't it made most of us, particularly those of us who have high-profile
yes.
positions, very careful about what we say? We are very, I am very cautious about, when I talk to anybody, when I have a small group from the outside in my conference room where I've ordinarily been extremely candid about a lot of things, I've stopped being as candid because you'd never know who's going to be recording
we
you.
We have learned, I think it's true, not to put anything significant in email because we know
mm-hmm.
how quickly email can be passed mm-hmm. along. And I think similarly, we'll learn to be more circumspect about our behavior in all kinds of social interactions when something like Google Glass becomes pervasive or when we have the chips embedded to enable us to poke our freckle and make a video.
And I think that is ultimately where we'll have a little USB port in the back of our heads.
Absolutely.
Or Wi-Fi.
You know, we have chips that are embedded in pets to help people find them
sure.
if they are lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only a matter of time before the GPS that we use in our cars becomes something that is just a part of who we are.
Or the Easy Pass, which many fear is already tracking us for the wrong reasons.
It was already used.
I got such a letter from a guy in the Department of Transportation saying every time you guys say something like that, I was in on it, I helped it design it. It's never going to do that. I just want you to know that.
Wasn't it used already
yes,
in the Porco?
In the Porco case.
What did they do in the Porco case?
Well, they used the thruway receipts, that is the toll information
right.
of the New York State Thruway, to track when he was traveling from the University of Rochester back to his home where he murdered his father.
He was just for those people, murdered his father.
Yes,
yeah,
okay. a college student who was convicted of murdering his father and attempting to murder his mom. So they found where he was going through the tolls at what time, and amazingly enough, they found the guy who gave him his toll receipt.
He remembered him?
And remembered him because the guy happened to be, Christopher Porco drove a yellow Jeep, and the guy happened to be a Jeep aficionado and literally had a conversation with him about the Jeep, so said his sworn testimony. And so the toll, the digital record of tolls actually helped to convict a guy of murder. So there you go. I don't know that it's been used. I mean, the line
take
people
a
always
of
say
him and his girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. The line is people are always saying it's going to be used in marital cases.
Sure,
maybe that's been the case. I don't know.
And one more thing about this Google Glass and the fact that it is not dissimilar from wearing bifocals or trifocals. I know when I had to wear bifocals, it took some getting used to, but your eyes are able to focus on which part of the glass that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that if you are not, you can ignore this top part of your brain once you've gotten it used to it, and so it's just another technology.
And it's not, but the question is, does technology move too fast for society, and philosophically, does technology move too fast for us as a human race? In other words, are we morally equipped to handle these advances, which are coming faster and faster and faster?
Well, we better be, because we don't have a choice.
I don't think we've been morally equipped to handle the world of the past century, let alone the next one.
Somehow we've gotten through, though.
Right, but it is happening much more quickly.
All right, well, the old guys will be back in a moment. Let's take a break. It's the Roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from the Research Foundation for SUNY, working to translate SUNY research into invention, entrepreneurship, economic growth, and public benefit. rfsuny.org. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont. Hosting Stephen Kiernan, presenting The Curiosity, August 8th, 7 p.m., northshire.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. And Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, helping gardeners grow hardy, deer-resistant, and summer-blooming shrubs, hydrangea, and sweet pepper bush, wardsnursery.com.
Hello again. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:52 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. A spirited discussion today. Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, as well as our own Alan Shartok. And there was a story, and I forget where this was.
Huffington Post.
It was about...
And he blew the house down.
More than one in three millennials are now living at home with their parents.
Millennials 18 to 31 years old is how they're defined,
And so the numbers are going up, and I don't think this is a bad thing, but discuss.
May not be. You know, in a lot of societies, this is much more typical. Families hang together. It's just that with our mobile society in America over the last couple of generations, we become accustomed to people launching out. And it seems as though the recession in particular has kindled a closeness of family life, let's say.
Yeah.
So more young people are moving back home.
But now, you know, we were just talking about whether society is prepared for the technology and how fast it is. The world order has always been you raise your children move on, they're out of the family nest, you see them on Thanksgiving if you have to, and but they're on their own, and the parents, as they go into their golden years, now they move into a phase of being by themselves. So it seems to me this is like a shotgun marriage where the reason in general that these millennials have to stay home is financial. They can't find work. There's not enough money. And I guess the next sentence is we have to deal with it, but I do think it has some ramifications on both the parents and on the children that may not be great. I mean, we'd like our children to be out on their own. We'd like the senior citizens to have their golden years to relax and not lie in bed waiting for their son or daughter to come home, even though you would never think about where your son and daughter is if they lived across the country. They could stay out all night as far as you're concerned.
Can I just point out, by the way, that a little media criticism here, this Huffington Post story, and you know, we've heard a lot about this notion of these young people moving back home.
Yeah.
But the numbers, actually, the raw numbers are this. In 1968, 30 32% of 18 to 31-year-olds lived at home with their parents. 32%. Now, in 2012, that's gone up from 32 to 36%. Mm. So the rise, you know, is not as it's about a 12% rise. It is 4 points. In other words, it is not as significant a phenomenon as a lot of media pointed.
So in other words, the headline, more than one in three, could have said 40 years ago, just slightly less than one in
exactly.
three.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the real story, as Ira points out, is the idea that there aren't enough jobs. I mean, that's the real story. We in our home, our daughter, who is an associate professor at the College of New Jersey, stays on with us quite frequently on weekends, as does her boyfriend, who comes up from the Boston area, and they meet here. And we love it. I mean, we can't wait for it to happen. So that has an added benefit.
It might not just be the lack of jobs. It's also the expense of housing. So you may be working, but you can't afford to live in an apartment, particularly if you're in a big city.
Well, and statistically speaking, it's also rising college enrollment. More young people are going to college.
And
so in that category, 18 to 31-year-olds, you have more people in school rather than staying at home with parents before they get a job. So there are other factors, not just cost.
I would ask Ira to explain why your premise was that this is a bad thing. I think it's kind of a good thing.
I don't know if it's a bad thing. I think it's a different thing than our society has become used to for the last century. And I the notion of growing up in your home and then being set aside like a free bird has worked out well, generally speaking, for young people. And it works out well for the parents who have raised their children, still want to remain close to the children, but don't want to have to worry about them coming home and what they're having for dinner every night.
And hey, the kids are going to get your money anyway.
If there is any.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Less left if they're taking it all while they're at home rather than. But, you know, one of the interesting substrata of the data, I don't know how you say that, but the fact is that men are much more likely than women to be living with their parents. That's an interesting phenomenon.
Because we're lazier in general.
Well, maybe that's the case. Or less able. I'm quite concerned, and I had interesting conversations with educators about this, about the difficulties confronting boys these days and men as they grow older. Because if you look 30 years ago when Take Your Daughter to Work Day was a phenomenon to try to encourage women to think about careers, which they didn't. Nowadays, we really need to think more about taking our boys to work, our sons to work, because those are the ones who are not performing academically, who are not able to fend for themselves in the world, who aren't socially interacting. The world is becoming much more, the guys aren't doing very well.
Listen, look what happened to George Costanza and Seinfeld when he was temporarily living at home and his parents were out of town and he brought a woman home with him, and they returned and found, shall we say, the evidence of their activities. I mean, we have to let our kids have some privacy.
Wow.
So they have privacy in my house.
You live in a great estate there in Great Barrington. You can go to the North 40 have some privacy.
Ah, well, okay, the personal shots have begun, and frankly, they started a long time ago. So let's end this segment. If you want to join us on the conversation, by all means, we'd love to hear from you. It's roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We would love all that. Now, that was hour one of the roundtable. If you're still alive, we have hours two and three ahead. That's all the time we have. Alan, thank you. Rex Smith, Ira Fussfeld, thanks, guys. Appreciate it very much.
I'm going to listen on the way home.
Pleasure to be here.
Don't talk about me because I'll be listening.
You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.